When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fiber to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Bobby Voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So, you like my new digs?
Why is it such a corporate? It's a Sunday. We're supposed to be in a fun environment. Now I've put a boardroom there.
No, to be in the office today.
I need to drink.
What are you drinking there? Mad Giant, it looks like.
Yeah, this is a Mad Giant. Fantastic range of beers. If you've never had any of their beers, definitely worth sampling. They've got a full range. Yeah. The New England IPA is always fantastic. The Carjacker, or Josie Carjacker, which is on tap now, I believe. Mm-hmm. And like I was saying just before we started, the venue is fantastic. So if you're looking for a nice place to go, you know, drink some beer in Joburg, that's a beautiful venue.
Yeah.
That's definitely one of the few places. In Fox Street, one Fox Street.
So what is Mad Giant?
Historical. What do you mean?
What type of beer is it?
Oh, so this is the Urban Legend, which is an IPA. This is the IPA. Where is it? There we go.
Nice.
So it's hoppy, good. Hoppy, fruity. Yeah, so it's between this one and the Pale Ale, which has got the fist. I can't remember what it's like, a bright purple label. That's also one of my other sessionable beers. And they're cheap as well, which is fantastic. You know, craft beer prices. Unfortunately, a lot of craft breweries are closing down, but we're seeing more reasonable craft beer prices these days.
Yeah, they are quite expensive. But where's my Uber Care package?
Oh, we forgot to set that up.
You forgot.
Yeah, we still set up. Yeah, I did. This was just a beer I had. I actually didn't plan a special beer.
Okay.
All right. So you were should I be sending you a beer every Sunday then?
Yes, I'm waiting for my Uber Care package.
Okay, there's also Uber subscription attached to that. How's that?
Cool.
No, we'll sort out for one for next week.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, I'm seeing you this week, so so we'll make a plan. Definitely. We shall definitely make a plan. So, from my corporate boardroom, shall we get the show on the road? I'm Duncan McLeod.
And I'm Richard van der Berg.
This is Talk Central, episode 268, for the week starting 4 August 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. Join our YouTube live stream on Sundays from about 1 p.m. and please hit that subscribe button.
On Talk Central this week, Telkom wants to kill ADSL.
Also on the show this week, honor means business. Mark Barnes quits the post office. Microsoft spends big in its fights against Twitch. And Facebook really wants you to know they own WhatsApp and Instagram. Silly, silly, silly.
It's a Sunday afternoon. We are live streaming on YouTube. And it's time to talk everything technology. Richard, shall we do our quiz?
Oh, we haven't forgotten about it, Duncan. That's fantastic.
No, I haven't started drinking yet.
First question. Eskom last week reported a full year loss of how much? And it's a lot.
A very large amount, yes. Not pocket change. Which UK politician has called for a backdoor into encrypted messaging systems?
Third question. Which international technology company is the subject of an ageism lawsuit claiming it has been firing all the employees en masse?
And what is the name of EOH's new ICT, or rather, what is the new name of EOH's ICT division?
And the final question. Who owns the Honor brand of smartphones, which has set its sights on being the third largest smartphone brand by value in the next 3 to 4 years?
And that's in South Africa. We'll get to the answers, as always, at the end of the show. But quite a bit to talk about, Richard, this week. And Telkom announcing during the course of the week that they have stopped their prepaid fixed line service. They've suspended it after they moved 96% of their copper-based prepaid service clients onto wireless alternatives. And now they're saying they're moving ahead with plans to get rid of their copper network entirely. I think this is a good thing, right?
Oh, definitely. Unfortunately, you know, the theft of copper and the value of copper has been, you know, obviously one of those big issues. But it's just going to help faster internet speed all around, right? And actually speed up some rollout, because we know they've kind of been neglecting their old infrastructure.
Yeah. And of course, copper, you mentioned theft, but copper is also slow, very slow. And unless you've got VDSL, which tops out at 40 megabits a second, but it's got the same problems associated. Well, VDSL, the problem with VDSL is it's only available in limited areas because you need to be very close to the telephone exchange for it to work. But the other problem, of course, with ADSL and DSL technology generally is it's very heavily or severely affected by the weather. So if you have a severe storm, you know, it could knock out your line, and very likely, as has happened to me many times in the past when I was an ADSL user, blown up my modem.
It's terrible. It's terrible, those issues. I remember having those random outages between copper thefts or water soaking the exchange or somebody just reallocating a number by accident, which has happened a few times. Yeah, it seems like decades ago, you know, but in fact, it's just been a few years that we've had fiber now. Mm. It's been a world of difference. We've been very fortunate to have it, though, as one of the first people, kind of in the cities to have.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, we've seen very fast deployment out into more rural areas and to smaller suburbs around the country. So yes, this move is going to then speed up that process, and that can only be a good thing. More data access, more Wi-Fi hotspots.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Very exciting, actually.
Yeah. There are a lot of people still on DSL. I forget the exact numbers, but I think the figure's still sitting at around 800,000 or so. So it's a big chunk of the. I think there's still more DSL users than fiber users. But I think it just shows that this is a dying technology, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's completely gone from Telkom's network within the next 5 years, and that'd be no bad thing. I do feel sorry for people though who are on DSL and are not going to be getting fiber in their area. Because not all areas will be covered by fiber, of course. Those people will probably have to fall back to some sort of fixed LTE or possibly a 5G solution. Although 5G is promising fiber-like connectivity, it's unclear at this stage whether uncapped solutions will be priced at the same level as fiber.
That's a downside, isn't it? I mean, somebody's going to control the airwaves. Somebody's got to control the airwaves, and that obviously means premium on that bandwidth.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's but the fiber rollouts are continuing. I mean, we've got Vimatel rolling out fiber in Mitchell's Plain. They're talking about firing up their Alexandria experiment, which has been delayed a bit. Supersonic, which is MTN's fiber to the home ISP, is interested in rolling out fiber in townships as well, they said this week. And they're probably going to start looking at that next year. We've got Frogfoot rolling out in Soweto. I think OpenServe is doing some work in Soweto. So, you know, I think the market is seeing opportunities, and not just in the leafy suburbs of Joburg and Cape Town and parts of Durban, but they're actually starting to see opportunities in the townships and other areas. I don't think fiber is ever going to serve small towns out in the Platteland, although never say
but
never.
Again, you know, if they have a very fast uplink somewhere, the local town infrastructure could be fiber with a, kind of a MTN, Vodacom-style uplink to a satellite somewhere if it's a very rural area.
Yes.
And then eventually there will be something that reaches a town or just a bit of technology. Mm. Or even a Facebook loon lingering over that town, you know. But yeah, I think there's a lot of value. And also within those small towns, you know, copper would still be a problem theft, because we know that crime prevention in small towns isn't always as effective, and those things could get overlooked very easily.
Yeah. But there are alternative technologies out there. We've got 5G coming. The spectrum for that should be allocated next year. We've got the WISPs, the wireless ISPs, servicing small towns and doing a pretty good job of it, providing, you know, typically, I don't know, between 4 and 10 megabit per second uncapped at reasonable prices to more outlying parts of the country. I think they mainly use Wi-Fi spectrum to do that. And of course, they're fixed LTE solutions, and the fixed LTE prices from the mobile operators are getting more and more affordable as competition intensifies. So, there are alternatives to fiber out there. But yeah, if you're living in, I don't know, what's a small town?
Pitsonovata.
Yeah, if you're living in Pitsonovata, you're almost certainly not going to get fiber to the home, but you probably.
Pitsonovata. It'll be the sister town.
We got the name for the show this week, I think. So, yeah, but you will be served either through a fixed LTE type solution, possibly 5G in the future, or a WISP will provide you with services. And there probably is a WISP in Botswana Vrata providing internet access to local residents already.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I mean, most small towns have cellular infrastructure and at least a 3G style capability, but a lot of small towns that I've driven through recently has all had 4G.
Yeah.
Especially along the main routes. Which is, that's good to see, definitely good to see.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see what 5G is going to do, though, for all the good and the bad that people are prophesizing about it. Is that really going to be the thing? Is that really going to be the next big thing? What about 8G, 7G,
Don't get ahead of yourself.
But in terms of the kind of deployments that are required for that, especially in smaller towns.
Yes.
In South Africa, it'll be interesting to see. There's been a remarkable amount of chatter about it, which is why I'm almost like a little hesitant about it. Like, why is it such a big thing?
Yeah, and I think 5G is going to be more for an urban type solution, and it's going to be very dense network because they're using high frequencies. Some of the initial bands they're talking about for 5G are in the so-called millimeter wave bands. So we're talking around 26 to 28 gigahertz. And those frequencies don't travel very far, and they don't penetrate buildings well at all. So some of those initial millimeter wave deployments, I think they're going to either be very specific applications, for example, at a mine where they need that high-speed connectivity for certain applications like, virtual reality or whatever applications they're using in that mining environment, or it's going to be in a very dense setting like a shopping mall, for example, or a busy main street like somewhere in Melville, for example, where there are dozens of restaurants next to each other, there might be a 5G hotspot serving that street. But I can't see widespread deployment on the millimeter wave bands. I think we're going to need to see spectrum being made available for 5G in much lower frequency bands. I think the other band, what's the other band they talk about? Is it 3.5 gigahertz potentially for 5G? I think they talk about that as a potential option. But ultimately, they're going to have to free up more spectrum in the sub-1 gigahertz band to do this stuff. And that's not where 5G is going to be deployed initially. So it really is going to be an urban technology. But maybe there's an argument to be made that in a small town with 100 homes out in the Karoo, for example, you just need one 5G base station and an antenna in people's windows, and they can then fiber back all to that base station, and they can experience true 5G speeds. But certainly 5G isn't going to be rolled out to farmers in the rural Free State.
No, of course not. But again, there's a lot of good solutions for that. I guess it just makes sense from a deployment point of view to have high density.
Yeah. And 4G is going to be with us for a very long time. I mean, we spoke about this in the show last week, and the government is finally getting a move on with the licensing of 4G spectrum, which should have happened 7, 8, 9 years ago. And it's remarkable what the operators have done to deploy 4G as extensively as they can with the limited spectrum that they've been allocated. Refarming their 2G and 3G spectrum for 4G. Once they actually get their hands on a decent amount of 4G spectrum, I think the coverage of 4G is going to improve significantly, particularly when they get access to the so-called digital dividend bands, which are still being used by the analog broadcasters, SABC, ETV, and MNET. Well, I think MNET's actually switched off their analog broadcast now, but certainly ETV and SABC. Once that spectrum in the 7 and 800 megahertz bands becomes available for 4G rollout, I think you're going to find that 4G coverage, even in quite remote rural parts of South Africa, will be excellent and providing really good throughput. It's going to provide that sort of coverage, that sort of geographic spread and coverage right into remote farming areas. You'll probably find that once it's been allocated, you'll pick up 4G in the remotest parts of the Transkei, which is going to have a transformative effect. I know if you go out to some of those areas now, you're lucky to get an edge connection at the moment. But there's been a lot of work going on, and operators like MTN particularly, but also Vodacom have been refarming their 900 megahertz spectrum for 3G. I was in the Drakensberg a while ago, right on top of the Drakensberg, and I was amazed to have I was on an MTN SIM at the time, and I was amazed to see I had full 3G coverage really in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that kind of defies the purpose of getting away from it all, right?
It does. That's why I shouldn't have taken my smartphone. I should have just taken an old Nokia or something.
Exactly. It's up to us to limit ourselves, right? Mm. We are such technology addicts. But we have to have the technology out there. I mean, it makes sense if you do have there for a lot of reasons to have that. You know, safety and security being one of them.
Yeah. I like being. Yeah. I actually like being able to be connected wherever I go. Mm. It's nice. I mean, it means, you know, I'm not tethered to the city. I can, you know, running an online business, I need connectivity. So if I happen to be in, I don't know, Putitijaba in the Northwestern Free State, I know that I can get online and I can do some work if I need to, which is fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. And so much of our lives now are digital, especially, you know, people that kind of live and work in a digital space. Yes, you can have a lot of arguments for removing that from your life. But when we get away from it, we don't necessarily want to get away from the stuff that we enjoy too, which is that digital side of it.
Yes.
Online gaming, again, is one of them. It would be so amazing to launch a game in the middle of nowhere if you really want to unwind, if that's one of the things that make you unwind, right?
Yeah.
We're living in strange times, and these are the new kind of norms.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Next time I go hiking in the Drakensberg, I can strap my PC to my back and fire up a session of PUBG on top of the amphitheater.
Well, on your phone, that's all you need, right? You don't even need to. Well, your notebook, you can take anything these days.
True. I don't think I'll be doing that somehow. But,
you should.
It's nice to know I can if I want to. for those, I don't know why I'm using PUBG as an example, because you're the PUBG addict, not me.
But I mean, there's a lot of things that we do. You know, video calling is another thing that's strangely been a massive thing that we don't really. A lot of people don't do it, and a lot of people just. Mm-hmm. Do it and they take it for granted. The fact that you can see somebody is much better than a physical phone call, right?
Yes.
Especially if you're in a remote location and you kind of want to catch up with family and friends, and you can lie on your beach couch there and just chat to people. I mean, again, it's using a technology for something different, and you can, again, get that real interaction out of it, bring people closer to you.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe 20 years and we have a little portable VR studio. You know, you can do a lot of cool things on the beach if you want.
Yeah,
physically.
It's true though. I mean, these things like FaceTime and Skype and Google Duo and all that sort of thing are very good these days, and I do use them occasionally, particularly Skype, usually to chat to family when it's a birthday or on Christmas or something like that. But I tend not to use video calls for business. I wonder what the reason is. I guess it's a bit intrusive.
Yeah, I guess business is still. I mean, but you wouldn't really. Few people, I guess, would do kind of a Facebook call or a WhatsApp call for, I mean, corporate business. I think you would there use proper tools that your business would provide, like Zoom or one of those things, I guess. But for most consumers, video calling is a big thing, right? That's where we spend most of, I mean, we used to phone a lot. We used to text a lot. And now it's messaging and video calling.
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting times. It's just, I've got family in rural areas, and even doing a WhatsApp call, it's weird how the technology out there just doesn't seem to work as well, because the time the calls run for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then something goes wrong, and you disconnect, and we have to retry.
I think it's a factor of mobile and how the base station is hooked up. So I think in many of those rural areas, you'll still find the base station is hooked up with some sort of microwave backhaul. Which is not as reliable and not as speedy as fiber. You're probably a further distance from that base station, which probably affects the quality as well.
Perhaps.
So we got a bit sidetracked there. We were talking about the death of DSL.
A lot of repercussions.
If I was still forced to be on DSL, if fiber hadn't arrived yet, I think I'd be annoyed if they were going to terminate my DSL and force me onto some sort of wireless solution.
Especially if you've got a relatively decent, it's taken years to get a relatively decent DSL connection. And we know it can be a good technology, especially if you're far out.
Yes.
I don't know, let's hope the wireless technology kind of, or perhaps they will deploy some kind of base station to improve the wireless connectivity in those areas where that's required.
Mm.
I guess it all comes down to rent and sense, right? How much are these people paying on data?
Yeah,
and what's their projected forward use?
Yes,
to invest in that.
Yeah,
if I was a mobile operator, I would jump on that and get these guys on a really good deal.
Mm.
Localize a really good package for them, and make sure that they kind of have that same servers. Because we know that the cellular companies would have good infrastructure out there, right?
Yes.
4G, it's just going to be a bit pricey for like a 30, 40 gig connection if you do it. If you're a heavy user.
I think for people who just use their DSL for browsing the web, for email, for doing their banking and that sort of thing, switching to an LTE solution is fine, no problem. But if you're it's possibly even fine for a gamer, although there might be some latency issues. Mm. The latency on DSL is really poor compared to fiber. And on LTE, it's, you know, you can get, if you're near to a tower, you can get 15 to 20 millisecond ping times. Although on fiber, you're in the city, you're getting 1 or 2 millisecond ping times. If you're using your DSL to watch a lot of Netflix, if you're one of those old school users who still uses peer-to-peer networks to download stuff, then I think they'd be annoyed if they were told, sorry, your DSL's going away and you have to switch to LTE.
There's massive gaming communities too in a lot of these small towns, right?
Yeah, true.
A lot of people turn to technology if there's not much else to do, or gaming at least. I've got a few friends from school that's kind of scattered around South Africa in smaller towns, and they all game.
Yeah.
And they all have DSL. Some of them are getting fiber, but the guys on DSL, yeah, if I was in that position, I would be livid.
Mm. But I think the good news for them is Telkom isn't going to switch off its remove its copper network or switch off its copper network anytime soon. This is not something that they can do in the next year or two. I think this is probably a 3 or 4, perhaps even 5 year time frame they're talking about here. So I think DSL will be with us probably at least until 2023, 2024 before they make any sort of call about switching it off.
Unfortunately, the demand for copper is still there, right? So I really hope we kind of get to the root of these guys buying it up, because also a company like Telkom, if they decide to kind of de-invest in DSL, their enthusiasm to replace or rebuild infrastructure could also not be top priority anymore.
No, I'm sure they are very much not keen to put copper in the ground that's been stolen. And in fact, we've seen this a lot in rural areas. So, you know, you used to drive through the Free State Millie fields and you'd see Telkom lines on poles for miles on end. You don't see that so much anymore because Telkom's actually physically removed it. Because it's getting stolen.
But again, a good call for just deploying fiber, right? So the infrastructure was there. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot more cost effective to deploy lengthy distances of fiber to these towns than it is to do a copper or all the infrastructure in any case.
Yeah, absolutely. Martin, how's it, Martin? He says, I work at Telstra here in Oz, and we do video calls all the time, even between two floors. It's video. We all have cameras on our desks. That's pretty cool. I don't think most employees in corporates don't have cameras, but they should maybe, hey?
Yeah, no. Well,
it's a good way for your boss to spy on you, too.
Yeah, it depends on the environment, too. But, I mean, in social circles, I see it picking up a lot.
Yeah,
and I can almost guarantee you people that are young now, growing up with, going through kind of their teenagers with smartphones, that's how they'll be communicating. Obviously text too, the WhatsApp type generation, but video calling is awesome, especially with all these cool filters, right? You can do a lot of cool things, and it's still better than one-dimensional communication, which is either text or voice. So you now have, you can see the person, kind of get better reaction out of their face, kind of just see an environment, which is really what technology is supposed to bring out in communication.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a bit about a smartphone brand called Honor. You must have heard of them, Rechard. I've also just heard of them, and I think I might have seen one or two of their smartphones in store, but I haven't in the past paid too much attention to them. I had lunch this week with Raymond Liu, who's the MD of Honor South Africa. They're a part of Huawei, and they launched in China, I think about 6 years ago, to appeal to the youth market who were increasingly buying smartphones from online stores like Alibaba and others in China. Apparently absolutely massive, and the Chinese spend an insane amount of money on e-commerce these days. And the Honor brand was created to be a more youthful brand, in the Huawei stable that's specifically only sold through online channels. I thought it was a bit odd that Huawei, which is a very well-established brand, decided to launch a new brand. But they say, Raymond said to me that they've it's been very successful for them. And they've got huge growth ambitions. They want to be the fourth largest smartphone brand in the world by revenue within the next 3 to 4 years. And they want to get into the number three position in South Africa, with Huawei being the number one brand in that period. And I've been playing around with one of their phones, which I'll save for the moment because it's my pick this week. But it's a seriously impressive technology. I wasn't, to be honest, expecting too much because Honor is seen as the more affordable smartphone alternative in the Huawei stable. But this phone, which unfortunately is not being launched in South Africa yet, and I'll explain why a bit later, is very good. I'd put it on a par with the Mate 20 Pro and possibly even with the P30 Pro from Huawei. Nice. Very, very good device and priced significantly below those two phones. But again, I'll go through that a bit later in the show when I pick this device. But an interesting brand, and I think they're going to do very well based on my discussions with Raymond Liu. The story is on Tech Central, so go and have a look at it if you haven't seen it yet. But a robust, well-thought-out product with a good interface. I'd read some reviews about it's called the Magic UI. I'd read some reviews from people saying it's not good, but I beg to differ. It's actually almost entirely built on the EMUI, the latest EMUI interface from Huawei, with a few tweaks for Honor. And it's really good. So I'm not sure it was American reviewers. I don't know, maybe they have something against Chinese companies. But the interface is great. It's on par with the best that Huawei is doing today. So keep an eye on this brand. They're very, very interesting. And if he gets his targets right, his ambitions for the South African market right, in 3 or 4 years, two Huawei brands will be in the top three by revenue in South Africa. Of course, that is a big ask because there's lots of competition.
Look, if you can get the value segment right, if you can produce a good quality phone for an affordable market, and we know South Africans are very, you know, kind of tight with their money or tight with money. Mm. You will do really well here. So I guess the question is, are you prepared to drop your price and go for volumes, potential volumes,
yeah,
and really capture the market, which I think is possible, especially with the data conversation we just had. People are now saying, yes, okay, I can do a basic smartphone. And I see a lot of young people, students, have relatively all right smartphone devices, but they're all kind of sub 1,000 rand.
Mm.
Jump up to the next level, you know, saving a little bit of money and getting something that allows you to do a lot more, you know, they would have a good market there.
Yeah. So watch this brand. I think they're going places. Very interesting stuff. What's next on our list? Moves around the camera. Right. Mark Barnes has quit the post office. He was there for, I think, about 3 years, 2.5, 3 years. He resigned this week, saying that he had a disagreement with the board, which is effectively appointed by government, over the Post Bank and whether it should be split out from the post office. He was not keen to do that, and he has tendered his resignation. The post office, I mean, do we really care about them anymore?
No, I haven't heard a good thing about them in a while. Maybe the odd post of a good branch, but every time I've been there, it's been the morale isn't very good there.
No,
it hasn't been good for a while, and that's really, I mean, apart from the real issues they have, yeah, it's just not been able to adapt to a modern era. It should have. It was the company that I think was perfectly in place to really give us some really good e-commerce style delivery infrastructure,
which Mark Barnes wanted to do, and he did seem to be doing some good stuff there. I mean, my mail, not that I get much mail anymore, but my mail, which I think for a period last year or the year before last, just wasn't getting delivered. When I think it was after that massive strike they had, and they had a backlog of millions of mail items. I wasn't getting my mail for months on end. But I've been getting, I had a subscription to Time magazine, which I recently cancelled. But that was coming, that's been coming regularly now for about 6 months. So the post office does seem to be working again from that basic perspective. I'm not sure they're delivering it very quickly because sometimes I would get two issues at once of a weekly magazine. He did seem to be turning it around and making the right noises, and he was certainly talking about e-commerce as being the future of the post office. And I think there's still a huge potential for the post office to to be that fulfillment agent for e-commerce providers. But I think all the problems they've had in the past with theft of mail and strikes and inability to deliver on time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, has just made so many people jaded about this institution that I think it was going to be very difficult for them, for whoever runs this organization, to get e-commerce providers or whoever wants to use their services to trust them.
Exactly. I mean, most people that use a kind of postal service has now gone to any of the third-party operators that sprung up around the country, right?
Yeah.
And using a good courier service, I mean, I even know a few people were joking about Ubering, but a lot of people just call an Uber and send a package somewhere.
Yeah.
That kind of thing has completely killed their business too, because people have had to find other ways to get things around. I mean, we are trying to be a growing economy, and we need to survive. I know a lot of up-and-coming small businesses too who want to, you know, it's always looking for new kind of ways to send stuff because it's such a big part of any business.
Yeah.
Because the internet makes a small business in Joburg a national business based on whatever their product is, if they can reach a national audience.
Yeah.
And it can become severely crippled if you don't, if you can't rely on the post office, you have to go somewhere else.
Yes.
You know, that's killed them.
Yeah. The only reason I ever go to a post office anymore is to renew my license disc for my car.
But how many do you have to go to before you can actually do it? I've often problems.
I had that. I had that problem this year, actually. I wanted to have it done, and I went to the post office where there was a queue of like 400 people waiting for to get their license discs replaced. And as the guy running the post office, or one of the employees of the post office, came out to announce that they'd run out of the paper that they print these things on. So you can all go home, ladies and gentlemen.
And these are functions that, again, another company could easily take over, or even a bank. You know, we've seen banks kind of take over some of these governmental type, like passport,
yes,
ID functions. And I think they're best positioned to do so.
Yeah, I agree.
Bank branches are closing, unfortunately, because they don't have a function anymore because of online banking and banking systems like that.
Mm.
Now they can kind of breathe new life into some of these big branches.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you applied for one of the new ID cards, by the way?
No, I haven't. I thought there was a system you had to wait for it or something.
I think it's open to everyone now. I'm not sure. I haven't done it myself, but I know a lot of people who have now, and I think you can just go. And I think more bank branches are doing it as well, but I haven't actually looked into the process, and I should, because that old green, my old green barcoded ID is falling to pieces.
Yeah, those things don't age well, right?
No.
Yeah, maybe you should look into that and actually just go and do it and do some feedback on it, because especially if it's open. And also, it's just very cool. A new digital, like a new card-based ID, I think it's a very nice thing, easier to carry around in your wallet too.
Yes. I just wish that they'd integrated it with your driver's license as well, so you didn't have to carry a driver's license card and an ID card around with you, but maybe I'm nitpicking.
Governmental departments working well together? No.
Perish the thought.
Never.
Perish the thought. But so Mark Barnes leaving the post office, I think it's a blow for them. I think he was competent. I think he knew what he was doing. One hopes that, you know, he seemed to be turning it around. And, you know, the post office was in trouble for so many years. All we need now is another state institution to be going to the National Treasury begging for a bailout. So let's hope whoever takes over from him continues the good work that he's done. Because there is, let's face it, there is good potential in the post office if it can fix its image and offer low-cost courier services for e-commerce providers.
I'll come up with something new. There's so much room for, I mean, they've got the infrastructure. Yeah. Just a new idea, fresh concept, I think, could turn them around.
Yeah. Yeah. David Filion in the chat room says, you can just go. My family and I did it a few months back. I presume that's referring to the ID cards.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, I think I must just go and get it done. I must just find out where the nearest bank branch is that does it.
I assume you can go to any branch. You don't have to go to your branch, your bank.
I think it's only specific bank branches that do it in conjunction with Home Affairs. So I don't think you can just go to your local branch or any branch. You have to go to a specific branch, I think.
Cool.
David, maybe you can clarify that, but I'm pretty sure it's a limited subset of the number of bank branches out there currently that actually do this. Because I presume they have to put some sort of infrastructure down in the branches, like cameras and security systems and etc.
Well, the banks should already have that, right? No, I'm just not speaking. But yes, no, it makes sense to roll this out in a few big branches. I mean, it's not something you can have running in every, because you also need a specialist person to run that
setup. Yeah, absolutely. But maybe I'll try it this week if I get a gap, although I probably won't because Friday's a public holiday, so everything's compressed.
Oh, no. Not another one.
Yeah. We haven't had a public holiday for a while, though, actually. I think the last one was in June.
But they just creep up on you, right?
They do, yeah. And although it's National Women's Day anyway, so I don't think we can actually take the day off, Rachat.
Yeah, no, I'll be working. I'll pay my dues.
Let's talk about the story you, and we find a picture for it. Not exactly a match of pictures, but this is the best I could do, I'm afraid. Ninja, who is a very big Twitcher on the gamer on the Twitch platform, has switched to Microsoft's Mixer platform, which I hadn't actually even heard of until recently. And Microsoft paid him, how much was it, $50
million? $50 million, yeah.
$50 million,
yeah, no, it's crazy. There's big money in streaming because they're pulling the advertisers, right?
Right.
Now, Twitch, as you know, to date has been kind of one of the big platforms for this. I'm just putting up some stats on it. A big platform for streaming, but there's also been a lot of negative things coming out from streamers on the platform. You know, apparently Twitch is a bit of a big company that you don't want to mess with. They would very easily take your monetization away or remove your subscribe button or do all kind of weird things if you don't. Because a lot of these companies also, they push you to produce more. They want more streamable hours so that they can push more ads.
Yeah.
So you can imagine it's a relatively volatile relatively volatile industry at the moment. So, you know, Microsoft's platform, by all accounts, seem to be addressing some of those issues. I haven't played with it a lot, but it's certainly worth checking out. And there's a lot of guys on there who's very happy with it, apparently.
Well, I had a look at it this week. It looks pretty good. It looks not dissimilar to Twitch, actually. But $50 million. This Ninja guy, apparently, according to his Wikipedia page, has 14 million subscribers on Twitch. So are they paying – and those subscribers won't come across necessarily. I mean, a lot of them will follow him.
They will. A lot of guys will follow. Because remember, for a lot of guys, it's their viewing platform. I mean, yes, you'll have a fall-off on that. And I'm sure a lot of his viewers aren't regular viewers. So the guys that watch once a year will obviously only subscribe once a year.
Yeah.
But for the bulk of it, remember, when somebody searches for Ninja Streams, and he's a very popular streamer, they will find Mixer – links, and they will go view it on the platform. So it doesn't really matter so much if people are following him, and if he's a big enough celebrity in the industry, they will follow. And this is just basically paying for advertising space, and it's a good move, I think, because he's a very big name. It's just 15, like how that relationship's going to turn out now.
I mean, they're not even buying the subscribers, though. So, but let's just do the calculation. $50 million divided by 14 million subscribers. They're paying about, if my maths is right, about $3.60 per subscriber. And then, although they're not actually buying the subscribers, that's a heck of a lot of money for...
But that's easily offset with advertising. Remember, $3 per user, that kind of ARPU isn't the most unreasonable one, I think, in the advertising space.
Maybe.
So advertisers like Red Bull, for example, are going to jump on board and spend more money on Mixer now. Anybody who wants to put an ad on a... Ninja videos not going to spend their money on Twitch, right? So he's got the deepest pockets, I guess. I would probably wager a bit that Microsoft's got more opportunity. Although execution is really all where it is at, right? If they can't pull this off in the long run and get sustainable views and get new people to use the platform. But having played with it, I'm kind of thinking we should also see if we can put our stream out on there and just kind of play with
it. We should try it, yeah.
Because they've got some really cool, I mean, Twitch has got this too, but just the layout of how they do it, it's more engaging for me to find new streams, I find. There's a lot of people doing real-life streams, in real life, just doing stuff, whatever it is, a show, video, walking around. It's interesting. Also could be a good competition for YouTube in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. We should have a look. We only stream to YouTube at the moment, but Wirecast allows you to stream to multiple platforms. I think they've got Twitch, certainly got Facebook Live, one or two others. I doubt Mixer's in there, but maybe it'll come in a future release. So, yeah, that's a lot of moolah.
A lot of money.
To pay a gamer. $50 million for a gamer. Wow, we're in the wrong business, Rachat.
And he's not even he's not even like the top gamer. Do you hear the story of this 16-year-old Fortnite player who won $3 million?
I saw that.
And then all the memes followed with when mom says, you know, gaming's not going to get you anywhere, right?
Yeah, well, there's big bucks. Big bucks.
Esports is another one. I'm less enthused about esports. I think there's a bit of a bubble there, to be honest with you, because these things aren't really attended as much. But gaming viewing, like whether it's like with YouTube, you know, you either have a single YouTuber or you have a group of guys doing YouTube videos.
Yeah,
that's the popularity, not necessarily the big brands producing content for YouTube.
Yes,
and the same with gaming. So these guys streaming, PewDiePie still massive. Dr. Disrespect, if you've never watched anything on streaming, go watch Dr. Disrespect's video. He is fantastic. He's a great streamer. So, you know, these celebrities are coming out, these guys that you want to follow, and that's where the money's going. And in esports, I think we're just going to see an adaptation of that.
Yeah.
We want to see the fun side of it. That's really what it's about. And that's what these guys do really well.
Yes. I think I better get this background video off before this woman has a heart attack. She's looking very stressed. So
she is not doing well in that game.
So, last story, another one you picked up, Rehat, was that Facebook wants you to know that it owns Instagram and WhatsApp. In case you didn't know that already,
I don't understand. You know, I've liked Facebook less and less since they started with their shenanigans, and now I don't know. I'm just using it because I do it for some work related stuff. Mm-hmm. But this kind of move, I don't know. It's really, why would you say that Instagram by Facebook?
Mm.
You're just pushing people away because we don't really want to be reminded that everything is owned by Facebook, right?
No, no.
WhatsApp as well. I don't really want to think that I'm, because it's just one step closer for them to integrate it. Oh no,
that's probably what it's
one
about.
Facebook app for
everything. Yeah, exactly. That's probably the long term game. I mean, they're already planning cross platform functionality between these various messaging apps. So it's probably a move in that direction. Do they do one app at the end of the day? Do they kill off one of them and it's all built around WhatsApp or something like that? I don't know. Probably not in the short term.
Yeah, and unfortunately, these are really good apps, right? They were born independently. They were just bought out by the big corporate. Mm. That's kind of a sad part, you know, part of the story. You know, it's like, do we give up this platform that we've kind of loved? And there's a lot of good things that can come up. I hope they take away the subscriber count numbers, because that would really do a lot to
in Instagram.
Instagram, yeah, it really do a lot to remind people that it's not all about likes. You know,
produce
cool things if you want to produce cool content. But yeah, having these things all mixed up is we're not going to good territory. Yeah, hopefully there's going to be another app that comes out that could take reins again.
Yeah,
always opportunity for that.
Mm, absolutely. So David says he got his ID card from Home Affairs. He went to Home Affairs rather than to the bank. I'm not going
better
to do that.
Better the devil you know than in the devil you don't.
I'm definitely not going to Home Affairs. Yeah, I've had memories of nightmares in that place. Let's move on to our regular features. We don't have a winner this week again. No one's put up their hand, unless, Rehat, you have... No winner again.
We don't just give that title away willy-nilly.
Yeah. But we do have a loser this week, which means I get to press this button on my board again. We do the picture, and then we'll do the button. Our loser this week is Eskom for losing almost 21 billion rand in its last financial year, the biggest loss by a state-owned company in South Africa in history. And there's no sign it's getting better. Well done, Eskom. Well done. Yeah. In fact, that deserves another one. What a disaster.
We can talk about this, but I actually don't want to, because it's laughable.
Mm, mm. Right, I have messages waiting for review. I haven't seen that before in the chat room. Facebook Messenger and its phone battery vampire tactics must die.
Phone battery vampire tactics. I love that statement. That was...
Excuse me. Nice. And Martin says, that was Martin, by the way. Martin also says, even the light one is still number two on battery usage, and I hardly use it. That's interesting. Yeah, I use Facebook Messenger Lite. I can't stand the full app. But yeah, my phone often complains about WhatsApp draining battery, actually.
I would imagine that would be... Shouldn't be though, right? But at least we got good technology from one of these things.
I'll read that again. I enjoyed that. Facebook Messenger and its phone battery vampire tactics must die. Do you, how do you really feel, Martin?
Yeah. To be honest. It's true. So, I mean, they've got, you know, that statement with great power comes great responsibility. They just have none of the responsibility side.
Yeah.
They've got
yeah.
fantastic platforms, and it could be, I mean, they don't always, yes, you have to innovate, but you don't always have to push the boundaries and collaborate with everything. If it works well on its own, you know, leave it there, tweak it, but, you know, yeah, anyway, I agree with him.
Right, let's do our picks of the week. Rachel, your pick is on screen. It looks like Lego. What is it?
Near that. Yeah, so Lego launched this last week. Where is this? So I bought this at the store reveal last week.
Oh, they just opened in Menlyn in Pretoria, didn't they?
Yeah, but this was at the Sandton branch. So essentially what this is they've launched this new Lego range called Hidden Side. And what it is, it's this is a backstory around it. I won't really bore you with the details. It's in this little town, and there's like this two kids that discovered that there is an underlying kind of ghost haunting happening. So these sets allow you to build a normal set, and then using an app, there's an AR overlay that you have these mini games that you can then, with each set, capture, reveal ghosts, and to have a little bit of an AR mini games around that. It is very cool. The app works very nicely. I mean, they said they're going to be improving it, so they're going to be adding new elements to the app, so you can use an existing set, you know, with new features ongoing. It's a nice addition. I always like this kind of innovation when you combine the two, and the effects are really nice, and it's really cool. I mean, you can see, if I can just highlight over there. So now you can see there's certain elements on that Lego set that will react with the AR element of it and have an overlay. And that'll based on, it won't always be there. So today it might be one particular thing, and next week it'll be something completely
different. Oh, nice. Okay.
So it's not baked into the set that it's going to die with it. The AR app allows them to add new ghosts and new some monsters and things. And I can see this running onto other things like the Stranger Things sets. You know, there's the AR overlay is very cool, even with existing sets potentially. Star Wars is another one of my favorite stuff, but there's Lego sets, and there's a lot of AR things you can do with that. So it's very cool.
How much does a kit like that cost?
So this is a basic kit that's $350 okay. grand.
Okay.
But they go up to about $2,000 or $3,000, I think, for the bigger sets.
Wow.
Just depends on how deep you want to go. But I just like to play with it.
You haven't built it yet.
I played with it at the store. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm very particular about how I build Lego. So when I have a down Sunday afternoon, which doesn't happen often these days, I just want to relax and unbox and play with it and kind of just go through the motions and see how it all works. So it'll probably do it this week. It's a fun innovation. I would certainly check it out if you're into Lego. Get yourself a cheapy set and play with it and see if you like it.
Cool. Right, I need to find the picture. There we go. My pick this week is, as mentioned earlier in the show, the Honor 20 Pro. I keep wanting to say P20 Pro. Honor 20 Pro. Really beautiful back, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that is nice.
So it's got a Kirin 980 processor in it, which is the same one that's in the P30 Pro. It's got 256 gigabytes of storage.
Nice.
It has 8 gigabytes of RAM. It's running Android 9 Pi and UI called Magic, which is very much based on the latest version of EMUI, which is Huawei's interface. As you can see on the screen, it's very much what you'd expect on a Huawei device.
That's a pretty high in specs too, right? That's not a basic.
No, it's high in specs. The couple of things it's missing relative to its more expensive Huawei siblings, doesn't have wireless charging, for example, so you can't pop it into a wireless dock, which is not something I use that much, to be honest. It doesn't have a barometer, although I think most people won't miss that. I kind of like a barometer feature, but I think I'm one of the very few, because I'm a bit of a weather nerd. But generally speaking, it's a beautiful phone, but it is not coming to South Africa. The Honor 30 Pro is very likely to be launched here next year. That'll be the successor, which will probably be out around May, June next year. So worth looking out for. But, right now this device is something of a rarity in South Africa in that it's not available here. But if you want to get one, I'm sure you can import one. But I'm impressed with this brand. This is a very, very competent device, and it's made me realize where I didn't before, where I just assumed Honor was a cheap and nasty knockdown. It is not. It is competing head-on with the Samsungs and Sonys of the world for leadership in the Android smartphone market.
What's the camera like? What's the photo quality like in video?
I haven't had a chance to play with it in any sort of detail yet, but it's got four rear sensors. One, two, three, four. There's the fourth one there with the flash. The main sensor is 48 megapixels. Mm-hmm. It's also got a macro lens and a telephoto lens. I forget what the fourth one does, but the 48 megapixel one has got, I think, at least that one has optical image stabilization. And then it's got a cutout. Let me just fire up an app that'll allow you to see it. I need something with a white background. There we go. It's got a little cutout camera in the top corner. I don't know how close I can get to the camera. There we go. So that little camera pinhole there is a 32 megapixel camera, front facing.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, very impressive. Very impressive. And this phone, if it was launched, according to Raymond Liu, the MD of Honor South Africa, if it was launched in South Africa, we'd be looking at about the 11 to 12,000 rand price range.
It's not bad.
It's very good.
I've seen the Mate 20 Pro that I'm very fond of, my phone.
Yeah.
That goes for about 10, 11,000 rand now too.
It's come down quite a lot, but it is a last year model. And the prices always do fall. This is a new model that would have come in at that price. So in a year from now, this would have fallen to 8 grand.
But old doesn't necessarily mean better.
Bad. No. Mate 20 Pro is a fantastic phone even today.
I was just saying before the show that I actually should at some point get a second one just to keep safe somewhere, because I know at some point they're going to stop making these.
Mm.
And the camera is just fantastic.
Although the Mate 30 Pro is due in about 2 months' time, so it might be worth waiting to see when that comes out. And I don't think the Mate 20 Pro will come off the market when the 30 Pro is launched. It'll just get another price cut.
Look, if they do the upgrade well, which I can't doubt that they won't, right? I mean, they've been doing a lot of good things recently. It's going to be nice. And then I'm also due for an upgrade soon, actually. Yeah. So that might be a good thing.
Okay. You're not worried about Donald Trump and U.S. sanctions against Huawei?
Worried about Donald Trump? No. The Trumpster?
No, you'll take a chance that it'll keep getting Android.
We know those sanctions were all just kind of tactical plays. You know, they know that they can't really... and the company's still going strong, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think we've got a good relationship with China, so we'll be fine.
Yeah.
South Africa, I mean.
Yeah, the problem is Google is an American company, so who knows what's going to happen. And I don't think Hongmeng OS is ready for launch just yet. Cool, I think that's our show this week. Let me just see if there's any other comments in the chat room. Martin says, Lego Stranger Things. Ooh, that's so cool, Rehart. We'll buy for my boy. Do give us some feedback. Can buy it gear best. Does it have NFC, he asks.
No. So this is just some of the bricks. So they have specific colors and shapes, I think. Colors is the main thing that the AR app picks up.
Okay.
They also launched it's not NFC, but they also launched worth checking out for any young people out there.
Yeah.
4x4 buggy, which you control with your app too. So it's a wireless buggy that you build, technique style, like quite a nice chunky 4x4 vehicle. And that thing looks amazing. So also worth checking out.
Excellent. Great. Let's do our quiz results. Let me dive in with the first one. Eskom last week reported a full year loss of how much? And that's 20.7 billion rand.
Cha-ching. Which UK politician has called for a backdoor into encrypted messaging systems? And the answer is Home Secretary Priti Patel.
I don't think Priti Patel thought that one through too clearly.
Oh, no, that's not...
Which international technology company is the subject of an ageism lawsuit claiming it has been firing older employees en masse? And that's IBM.
Fourth question. What is the name of EOH's ICT division? And the answer is IOCO.
And the last question in this week's quiz, who owns the Honor brand of smartphones, which has set its sights on being the third largest smartphone brand by value in the next 3 to 4 years? And that is, of course, Huawei. And that is our quiz, and that's our show for this week. We will be back next Sunday on YouTube at 1 p.m. Do join us. Hit that subscribe button. Our YouTube address is youtube.com/TechCentral. One word, and hit that subscribe button and be alerted whenever we go live on air. And we've got some exciting things coming to this podcast soon. Rehart, you're going to have a green screen behind you this time next week. So we're going to be doing some cool stuff, which I'm really looking forward to. What's that?
Magic.
Magic.
I'll paint everything green on my chair too, so you won't see this.
Yeah, I'm still going to try this trick of putting on a green beanie and a green t-shirt and see what it looks like.
Green rim glasses would look awesome, actually. You just have nothing there.
So, I'd have a boardroom table there.
No, that's up to you to get the good background graphics then.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, you criticized my new office. I'm going to have to refurb it again during the course of the week at great expense and a great amount of labor.
I liked your studio before. Why don't you change it?
I might go back to that. Although we don't, from next week, I don't think we need background images because we'll just be talking heads on the green screen with a video or whatever it is behind us. But we'll figure that out closer to the time. I think, Rechad, that's it. 071-999-1111. I mean, not forget that is our WhatsApp line, 071-999-1111. Until next week, from Rechad and myself, take care and cheers.
Ciao, ciao.